The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast, episode 196. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. If you haven't already, please make sure to leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to this show. It helps us out so much. It helps us get this message in front of more people, and it takes just a moment. So I look forward to hearing from you. If you do leave a 5-star rating and review, send me a screenshot of your review. My email is in the show notes, and I'll send you a 30-minute training on how to find and evaluate properties. So if you're somebody who doesn't really know how to look for properties, how to analyze the numbers and all those things, this is definitely something that you want to check out. So I definitely look forward to hearing from you. Also, I am doing a giveaway. Today's guest, Darren Campbell, has a book he recently came out with. It's called Everything You Need to Know About Distressed Properties. It's a really good book. I'm actually reading it right now and I'm learning a whole lot. So to enter the giveaway, all you have to do is head over to YouTube, comment on the video, and subscribe to my channel, and I'll pick somebody and I'll mail you the book free of charge. So looking forward to seeing you over on YouTube. Also, if you are someone who lives in an expensive market and you are serious about buying an out-of-state property in a cheaper market in the next 12 months, I am hosting a workshop, 4-week workshop starting on January 17th, where I'm going to dive into various aspects of investing out-of-state. So if you're serious and you're ready to put the work in and implement the information, go to outofstatemoney.com/workshop, or go to the description of this episode and go to the website from there. All right. So excited about this episode. Part 2 with Darren Campbell. He has done over $4 billion in transactions. He has been in the real estate business for over 30 years. Very rare to be able to speak to somebody who's been in the game so long. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like this video and subscribe to the channel. If you're on the audio side, make sure you leave us that 5-star rating and review. Definitely greatly appreciate it. Excited about this episode today. I got part 2 with Darren Campbell. Darren, thanks for coming back on the show.
It's my pleasure. I'm always excited to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So for those who maybe didn't catch the first episode, just give a quick overview of who you are, what you've done, and some of your accomplishments.
Okay. This is year number 31 in the real estate business. I graduated from UCLA a long time ago, and with a degree in economics. Shortly thereafter, I realized that most of the massive wealth was being built in the real estate space. And so I threw my hat in, I jumped in, I got my license, and started selling real estate. Started out primarily selling apartment buildings, and then transitioned over time to buying and selling all kinds of investment property. And to date, have closed about $4.6 billion in transactions. And I've been blessed and fortunate to have seen just about everything there is to see in the real estate game. I'm excited as we approach the start of cycle number 3. I think I've seen, you know, 2-3 full turns in the market. And I get excited because it creates opportunity, So I still am an active realtor. I am an active investor. I am an active syndicator. And now I coach and train people who want to learn the game.
Definitely, definitely. So you don't like banks right now, Darren. So let's talk a bit more about why that is.
You know, let's be clear. I have a lot of very good banker friends, mm-hmm. but I don't like the institutions at all. The banks, I think, have made it difficult, unnecessarily difficult, and have zero transparency when it comes to what it takes to qualify to purchase, why a person might qualify and why they might not. And I think sometimes it's even arbitrary. We know they've been guilty of redlining in certain places where they won't lend in certain areas to certain people of a certain hue, but that's another story. It's been the subject of many lawsuits and settlements. But even in general, even in the mainstream, banks aren't transparent. They don't necessarily tell you exactly what it takes to qualify and exactly why, exactly what the maneuverability of those rules are. Like if you qualify with a 680 FICO score but you don't qualify with a 670 FICO score, shouldn't you be able to put a little bit more down and know that, okay, if I come up with another 2% down, I do qualify? Or what if a person doesn't have a incredible credit score or a whole lot of credit, but they make really good money and they've been paying their rent on time for the last 11 years. To me, that sounds like a qualified person. All I need to see is that you can afford this payment and that you pay your bills. And if I'm the bank, I'm lending you the money. Why should that not be the case? For me, I feel like there's a systematic sort of discouragement when it comes to ownership. And I think that's sort of by design. I don't think there's some big chess player in the sky saying let them own and don't let them own. But I think systematically there's some inherent thing that says, you know what? All the real wealth belongs to landowners, real estate owners, landlords, and let's keep as many people in the tenant position as we can. And then let the wealthy keep growing their wealth by having those tenants pay their mortgages. I can't stand it. I think ownership should be an objective for everyone who's gainfully employed, who would like to own and can prove that they are capable and responsible enough to own. And then, because what's really happening is if all you do is work your job for your career and all you do is rent that entire career and pay someone else's mortgage, your income will go from 60 grand to maybe 90 grand or 100 grand by the time you retire. But that house that you could have bought for 250 grand will go to 450 or 500 grand over that same period of time. So real estate, real values appreciate so much faster than income does that it's a shame that people get boxed out from an institutional standpoint. Now, a lot of us find a way to own regardless or despite the things that try to keep us out, but not enough of us do. And do you know, like right here in Southern California, the ownership, the affordability index is at about 24%. That means like 76% of the people can't afford to own in this town, which is a travesty. It's ridiculous. And then to have the banks helping them out by keeping certain people out and having the banks not be transparent about what it takes to become an owner, it keeps more people in that position. And no one's building wealth by renting and not owning anything. You know, you're counting on a job. The job's not going to make you rich. Your boss ain't going to wake up one day and say, okay, here are the keys to the company. You know what I mean? So how do we build wealth otherwise? So yeah, I'm anti-bank in a lot of ways.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. What do you think about these corporations that are just buying up properties and renting them back out to people who can't afford the homes?
Well, guess what? They're playing the wealth building game that we all ought to be playing. And they recognize it, and they're hedge funds and what have you. They've got their billions of dollars. They see opportunity. You know, it's easy to get mad at them and say that that's the man is taking advantage of us. But all you got to do is mirror the man. Do what he's doing. A guy I consider a mentor just declared that his fund is going to buy 15,000 houses and rent them out to the renters. The renter pool is continuing to grow and the ownership pool is continuing to shrink. And I say, follow those guys. If he can buy 15,000 houses, why can't I buy 5 over the next 5 to 10 years? You know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's a pure indication of where the wealth is going and the opportunity that this marketplace is presenting. Don't sleep on it. If billionaires are jumping in buying single family homes to rent, take a clue. It's success leaves clues.
Definitely. So I was checking today and the 30-year fixed rate, I think, is over 8% at this point. And a lot of people see that and they're like, you know what? It's not a good time to buy. I this is not the market for me. What are some ways that people can overcome the interest rates and other strategies they can use to get into a property?
Well, first, let's debunk that myth, okay? Now is not a good time to buy. Well, if now is not a good time to buy, when do you think is going to be a good time to buy? You know what I mean? If interest rates go down tomorrow, they won't, but if interest rates drop to 5% tomorrow, you know what's going to happen? Prices are going to go up because buyers are going to flood in the marketplace and drive the prices up. The opportunity is when interest rates are aggressive like they are, because we're trying to make up for all that free money we passed out, rates are up. It's squeezing some buyers out. It's a great opportunity to buy. The thing is, real estate values don't tend to plummet. You know, the typical recession is a couple of years. And if you can get in, like, look, you buy a piece of real estate, you rent the interest rate. You can refi. There's no rule against you refi. So buy right now because there's fewer buyers out there to compete with. Buy, hey, if you got to borrow at 8%, borrow at 8%. When this little hiccup is over and they pull them back down to 6 or 6.5, which is really equilibrium, is kind of where we should live all the time. Then you refi. You're renting the interest rate. You don't own that interest rate. You're not married to it for 30 years. Refi it when the rates come down. But you buy now. You're never going to, I have in 31 years, Sam, I've never had anybody call me and say, damn it, you made me buy too soon. Nobody ever said that. Not even once. Shouldn't have bought it. I should have waited. Nope. Nobody ever should have waited. They all wish they had bought it even sooner. It's like, dang it, we should have bought that a year ago instead of last month. So no one's ever said that to me. So I say, follow the signs. Buy now. If you got the opportunity to buy, buy now. You don't know what tomorrow holds. All I know is think of what your parents paid for their first house and what you got to pay for that same house today. Don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because a lot of folks who are in position to buy over the last couple of years, their whole thing has been the interest rates, even though they could buy tomorrow if they wanted to. And the scary thing is that those folks might still be singing the same tune 3 years from now and just coming up with another reason not to buy when you can, and just shutting off all of the options and opportunities just because of what the press is putting out, because of the interest rates and all this stuff. And they're really missing out.
They're missing out because for every day that goes by that you don't own and you pay someone else's mortgage, you're financing their wealth. You're helping them build wealth. You're not building any wealth of your own when you don't own. Everyone should own. I don't even necessarily think you need to own where you live. You need to own, not necessarily where you live. My personal philosophy is lease your dream house and go invest that money in real estate that pays you back. But anyway, that's a whole other philosophy. We'll talk about that on another show. But the point is, you don't wait to buy, because the thing is, 2 years ago by, 3 years ago by, the value of that real estate will have gone up and you'll have to pay more to buy it. But if you bought it today, if interest rates go down, you can always refi. Now, here's the thing. People are spoiled because of the last 12 or 13 years, where we saw interest rates go as low. I got a guy into a house at 1.9%. Is that crazy? That's the lowest I've ever seen.
Very crazy.
And then for the next couple of years, I got him in the twos. And then for the next couple of years, I got people in the threes. And now we're at 8. So everyone's spoiled. Oh my God, they're 8%. Do you know what my parents' interest rate was when they bought their house in 1972? 19%. So we saw 2% and 3% rates. Ladies and gentlemen, you ain't going to see them again. We can't be fooled and be spoiled by that unlikely run of low interest rates that we had. That was a mechanism to try to get us out of that 07, 08 recession. And it worked because it made real estate values go crazy. But what people don't understand is that it's not conversely perfectly related, rates and prices. Rates have gone up. It doesn't mean prices are going to go down. The inverse relationship that's not exact. That's not how it works. Real estate trajectory, just go back 10 years, see what the value of the house you live in was 10 years ago. Do it again for 20 years. Do it again for 30 years. That real estate inherently goes up. No matter whether there's a slight hiccup for a minute or not, thinking you're going to time the market and catch it at the perfect time and prices are going to dip because rates bumped. It's just not happening that way. Here's the reason. There is so much demand and limited supply. Demand outstrips supply, so prices aren't going to tank. Short of a cataclysmic Armageddon World War III that destroys all value in the marketplace, real estate prices are not generally going to come down in residential, everyday real estate where everybody needs a roof over their head. Hey, if you want to play the office game, different story. Office rates are probably going to get to 40, 50% before the game is over. But residential real estate in places like metropolitan areas like Southern California, like New York, like Chicago, like anywhere in Dallas or Houston, those kind of places, the demand is outstripping the supply. So prices won't plummet. They might adjust. They might mellow out, but they're not going to tank. So anybody sitting around waiting for prices to tank, they're going to be sitting around waiting for a long time and watching other people become wealthy.
Definitely. A couple of things you mentioned is your parents 50 years ago buying a home at 19%. And I was looking at a statistic and I think it said the average over the last 50 years is like 7.5% or something like that. So if you think about it, interest rates aren't high, you know, like it's just, you know, especially for us who are younger, all we've seen to your point is these low rates. So
right.
We are spoiled.
Right.
And we haven't been living in a realistic market for most of our lives. For those of us who, you know, are fairly new to the space, like 10 years or something.
It's just relative. Yeah. They're high relative to the last 15 years. They're not high. Historically, equilibrium is 7.5%. You just nailed it. Mm-hmm. Equilibrium is 7.5%. So when my parents in the 70s paid 19% and they came down to 14%, they refied. They were celebrating. Oh my God, rates are low. Let's jump in. And then again, when they hit 11, I remember when I was early in the business, if I could get a guy financed on an apartment building at 10% or less, he was partying all the way to the bank. And so when we saw him go down to 2, you get a skewed perspective looking at 2s and 3s. 8% is not expensive. And you watch by January, when Congress needs to adjust those rates and we're going into an election year where politicians need to be in good favor, you'll see those rates come down back into the 7s. And guess what? It doesn't need or is not supposed to go much lower than that. You catch a 7.5, lock it, because that's about where it's supposed to be.
Definitely. And I think, you know, people definitely shouldn't be waiting. And to your point, something I want to highlight that you mentioned earlier, I really want people to understand this. Like if and when they go down, everyone's going to want to buy.
Yeah.
And so I believe it's to anyone's best interest to see if you could figure out if you can make a deal work now in this market, because there's less competition.
When there's less competition, sellers are more negotiable because he didn't have 20 offers. You might be lucky enough to be the only offer on the table. Guess what? I get to beat that seller up really badly if I'm the only guy on the table. But in a 4% interest rate economy, there's going to be 20 offers on that deal. Everybody's jumping in the game. But when rates go up, it scares some people away. It knocks some people out of that category of affordability. Competition is less. Sellers are a little bit less arrogant, let's say. They know that you got choices and they don't have a lot of, buyers aren't lining up to buy their property. So you got a better opportunity to get a great price. If those rates drop back down to 5% tomorrow, you're going to be competing against 15 other offers. Those other offers are going to drive the prices up and you're going to pay more for that real estate than you have to. You're only renting the interest rate. But when you buy the property, that price is your price. But the interest rate changes and you get the opportunity to refinance when it does. Don't let that keep you out.
Definitely, definitely. So I've seen that you've been covering a lot of creative financing strategies that I definitely want to share, because again, it's important for people to think outside the box, get creative so they can participate in this market. So the first one I want to talk about is the loan assumption. Can you break down just like how that works and how someone could approach a situation like that?
Oh yeah, it's a huge opportunity. Okay, so we've alluded 3-4 times already to the historically low interest rates that we've seen, right? So back in 2015, interest rates got as low as 1.9%, 2%. Well, many of those people who bought during that era need to sell, want to sell, want to retire, want to downsize, want to step up. Those people bought properties and got 30-year fixed rates in the twos and threes, right? 99% of those loans are assumable. So when that person wants to sell, let's say that person bought that house for $400,000 and maybe it's worth $600,000, but maybe they have a $300,000 3% loan. Okay. If that loan is assumable, that means you can take over, you can step into that loan, assume that loan formally and have a 3% mortgage. And then there's a very good possibility you could convince that seller to carry a second, so that now the $300,000 of that money you need to borrow is at 3% instead of 8%, which is if you went and got your own brand new loan, you're borrowing it. You and I just talked about it. Interest rates today, 8%. If someone has an assumable loan that you can step into, you save all of that interest by stepping in and assuming their debt. And there's a lot of that going on. So you say, some people will say, the devil's advocate, folks would say, well, why would they sell if they got 2% money or 3% money? It's because life happens, Sam. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say the S word, but it happens. It happens. And that means people's circumstances change. People's situations change. Who was buying all those houses? Baby boomers. How old are baby boomers now? 60s, approaching 70s. They're retiring. They don't want all that house anymore. Their kids don't want those houses for whatever reason. The point is, those people borrowed money and everybody refied or borrowed low, cheap money over the last 13 years. Everybody who could did. Well, there's millions of homes with interest rates sitting there in the threes, and they got 20 years left on that money. You can assume those loans, and that's a strategy. If you're shopping for a home, you could tell your professional, your realtor, that you want to buy, you want to assume someone's loan. Now, many times, though, that equity has gone up, so they got a big equity chunk there, and that might call for a little bit more of a down payment than normal. But I say, hey, don't worry about that. Be aggressive. Ask that seller to carry a second. I want to assume you're first, and I want you to carry a second, and I'm going to still come in with the same down payment that I intended to. Definitely. Little or nothing. That's my favorite. My favorite down payment is little or nothing. Yeah. And that's very possible because you got motivated sellers.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, for assuming the loan, would you have to go through whoever their lender is?
Yeah. If you assume, now we'll talk about subject two in a minute, but if you assume their loan, you're going to apply to assume their loan formally from their bank. And if you qualify, like if you would normally qualify for a regular loan at 8%, then odds are you qualify to assume their loan at 3%. And so that's a formal process. You apply with that lender approves you, and you step in and you and the seller work out the difference. And now you got a 3% loan. You got 20 plus years left on that money. Cheap money. Don't ever let that go.
Love it. Love it. And you mentioned as well, if they have some equity, you may be able to basically add a second mortgage on top of it that you'd pay to them.
I want that seller to carry as much as I can get them to carry. and the thing is, many times that seller doesn't need all that equity out. He doesn't need that money in his pocket because he's retiring or he wants to travel or he's not going to go buy another big house. And the beautiful thing about that is if he carries that equity or a bunch of that equity for you, sometimes all of that equity for you, then he does it in the form of a second trust deed. And guess what? He gets a monthly check from you. He's got an income coming. And here's another thing. He doesn't immediately realize the capital gains hit on any profit he made because he just did what we call an installment sale. He's carrying his profit. And if he strings that profit out by carrying it for you, he doesn't have capital gains implications. Now, I'm no accountant. That's not tax advice. But I'm telling you what happens. That helps that seller in a lot of ways. If he doesn't need all his money, he has incentive to carry it for you. You're paying him interest on it. If he's got 3% money that you can assume, he might loan you the other money at 5%. And then he gets income every month from you. You get a house with way below normal interest rates. You got leverage. You got 20 years left on that money, and you're in the ownership game. Everybody ought to get in the ownership game. That's whatever you got to do to get in the ownership game. Because equity is rising, values are rising, and when you're on the sidelines, you're losing.
Yeah. Definitely. Do you advise, like, in order to find sellers who might be open to that, working with an agent or looking off market? What's your take on that?
You can do both. But mm-hmm. as a real estate professional, mm-hmm. I think you're always at an advantage when you got a great professional advocating for you.
Yeah,
I know how to talk to a seller in ways the average person never knew. And I know things about where there's space to maneuver, where the typical person just doesn't. You know, I could say, yeah, that's me tooting my horn, but I know what the hell I'm doing. And that's just a fact. If I'm representing you, you got a leg up over that seller and any competition out there and his agent, because there's nothing I haven't seen. I know what that seller can do, and I know what the advantages are of him carrying for you. I also know how to look up his loan and know exactly what he's got. And then we can go and ask for what we need based on already knowing what situation he's in. So I already know if he's, you and I see a house and you like that house. I know how to go figure out what year that guy is in on his loan. I know how to figure out what his interest rate is on that loan. Then obviously we can figure out what his equity position is on that loan. And then when I find out what he wants to do next in life, then I can structure your offer so that it's a win-win situation and we can beat any competition as a result. So knowledge is everything. So if you don't have the knowledge, if you don't do this 24/7 all day, every day, somebody who does might be able to teach you something that you didn't know. And I'm telling you something, when I represent you, you're ahead of the game. You're going to win. And that's 30 years and, you know, 24/7 experience does.
Hey, you got 4.6 billion reasons to believe what you're saying.
Been there, done that. That's probably a fair assessment.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. So it sounds like the ideal seller for a situation like that could be someone who needs to sell and doesn't necessarily need all the cash, some sort of distress, and maybe even wanting to avoid a large potential tax burden.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And all those exist every day. I'm out making offers every day, literally every day, because of situations like that. I tell people, I don't buy real estate. I buy situations. You've heard me say that before. I buy situations. So I love distressed properties. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I love distressed situations because people are in a position where they have to sell, not where they just want to sell. Yep. But even where there's no distress, you might find someone who has to sell because they're retiring. We just made a deal with someone who's going to move in with their kids back east and be close to the grandkids. And, you know, that's just the way they want to spend retirement because mm-hmm. the grandkids are in Michigan and they wanted to sell their house to us. And they were sitting there with a 3.5% fixed 30-year loan. We stepped in and we took it. Oh, and by the way, they took a lower price because they didn't want us to do open houses and all that. So they took a lower price. They're like, we don't want all that traffic coming through our house. So could you just buy it? they that's what they said to me. I was going there to broker the deal.
Yeah.
They're like, don't you buy houses? I go, yeah. And I said, but I buy discounts. I don't pay retail. They go, well, make us an offer. I go, are you sure? Because if you let me put it on the market, I'm going to get you top dollar. They were like, we'd rather just do a fast deal. So I made them an aggressive offer. I asked them to carry the equity. I asked them if I could take over their loan. Yes, yes, yes. How fast can we close? All they cared about was getting to Michigan as fast as they could.
Wow.
They didn't need the money in their pocket. They didn't need the money. They'd much rather get it in the form of a monthly note.
Yeah.
Now it's income for them.
Wow. That's fantastic, man. Where was that one at?
Studio City.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
A location.
Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Impeccable house. I don't even have to do anything to it.
Wow.
Right back on the market.
Wow. So is your plan to resell it?
Well, in certain cases, if we can make a really big pop really fast, mm-hmm. we'll sell it because that'll buy the next five.
Yeah.
But in other cases, we look and see what the rental market is and say, you know what? That's going to be a great rental property. Look, if you got 20 plus years left on that mortgage and the difference between that cheap mortgage that we took over and the rent is like $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a month in cash flow, we keep it.
Yeah.
Just depends on the situation.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Sometimes you can buy one with enough juice in the deal where if you sold it, it's going to buy your next two or three. So we look at it like that, depending on which direction.
Definitely. Definitely. So let's talk about subject to financing. How does that work?
Now, subject to is similar to the assumption you're still taking over the existing cheap, low interest loan, except you're not formally applying to the bank to get it. Mm-hmm. You're just making a deal with that seller, paying them a down payment or an equity piece, and you're stepping in and just taking over those payments. Now, the banks, my best friends, don't love that scenario. They don't love it when people do that. But in my experience, when they get their payment, they don't care who wrote the check. And so if they're getting paid and they're getting paid on time, they don't want to rock the boat. What do they want to do? Cancel your deal out, call your loan due because you're paying it on time? You know, it defies logic. What they don't love is that you're not their borrower. And so you own the house now, but you're not the person that they qualified and that they vetted and that they gave a hard time in the beginning. You just now own the house. They don't love that scenario, but again, only been doing this 31 years. I've never seen the bank get upset for collecting their payment on time. So the person that steps in, they take over the payments. We call it subject to, because you're taking over the property subject to the existing financing. And you're not assuming the existing financing. You're just taking it, stepping into the position.
Got it. That makes sense. Who would be the ideal seller in that situation?
Somebody's got to sell, and they got to sell fast, and they're in trouble. I just did one. We just did one last week. And the seller, unfortunately, lost their job during COVID, right? They lost their job during COVID, hadn't paid the lender in over a year, and they were going to lose the property. They were in foreclosure. They were in pre-foreclosure position. They would have lost it last Friday. Wow. But we stepped in and said, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take over that loan, subject to. We're going to catch up all your arrears payments, and we're going to give you some money to walk away. So we ended up buying that deal with less than $20,000. It's got about $150,000 in equity sitting there on the table. We're taking over the loan, making the payments. We already caught up all the old payments. Haven't heard the bank kick or scream yet. They got all their money. The loan's in good shape. We won't hear from them. Yeah. They're happy. The bank doesn't want to foreclose. They hate that. That's not what they're in the business of doing. They want to lend more money. And every bad loan, here's what people don't know. Every time somebody's in foreclosure and that loan goes bad, there's now a handcuff, a straitjacket on that money that the bank doesn't get to leverage and lend out again. That's bad debt. The bank doesn't want bad debt. They want everybody to service their loans so they can go out and relend that money or sell those loans or do whatever they do behind the scenes in secret that they don't tell us about. But they want to keep doing that. And foreclosures and things like that interrupt that process. So as much as people think the bank wants to take my house back, they don't. Once they put you in that house, they need you to stay quiet, make your payments, and keep it pushing, because that allows them to lever up. The feds allow them to loan that money two or three or four times over. Actually, I heard seven times over. But the point is, a good loan creates five or six more good loans for them. A bad loan, now you just restricted the amount that they have available to borrow from the Fed to lend again.
Definitely. I'm honestly really glad you mentioned that, because around the internet, I've heard crazy stuff like people thinking banks are out to make people lose their homes and all this stuff. But you just nailed it. Like, they just want their passive income and for you to keep paying. Listen, that's the best case scenario.
The best job in the world. Number one, the best thing to own is a bank. You want to be the bank. Next best thing is a real estate owner. But the banks don't want to be us, because they make money lending money. And we give them our money, and then they go loan our money. They give you 1% on your money, and then they go loan it out at 8%. You think they want to stop lending? No, they're in the business of lending. It's the best game in town. And so they're not in the business of trying to take your house. They have no interest in that whatsoever.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the other things I wanted to talk about is distressed properties. You know, it's like a buzzword. People talk a lot about it.
Yeah. Show them a new book.
Came out with a new book about it, which I'm going to do a giveaway. So I'll say, whoever leaves the first comment on YouTube, I'll send you this book. So make sure you do that. I'm going to have that in the show notes too. But can you talk a bit more about distressed properties in general, what that means, how to find them, and then also some of the stuff you cover in the book?
Okay. So the book is everything you need to know about distressed properties. And that's important right now, and it's timely right now, because we are in a particular market that is a recession. We're in a recession. Anybody who thinks we're about to go into a recession, or maybe we're going to be in a recession, you're late. We're in a recession already. But what's a big characteristic of recessionary environments is distressed properties. Now, what is a distressed property? A distressed property is a situation, once again, situation, where a person is behind on their mortgage for one reason or another, can't pay the bills, can't pay the mortgage, and that property is in some form of default. So there's a status call notice of default when someone's like 4 or 5 months behind on their payment. Then it gets to a notice of trustee sale where the bank has said, okay, if you don't pay us in 21 days, we're going to be forced to take the house. And then there's REO, which is when the bank has taken the house. So those are three phases of foreclosure. And so the notice of default phase is 90 days. Here in California, it's 90 days. Everything I tell you now is about Southern California. States' laws vary from state to state, but I'll tell you what it is here. The default stage is 90 days. So once someone is like 4 or 5 months behind, the bank goes, oh, they're not going to pay. Let's issue a notice of default. And they record that. Now, that's important. They record that notice of default, which makes it a matter of public record, which means any of us could find out about anybody's property that's in default. That's very important to note. Then after 90 days, you still haven't cured it, you still haven't paid it, they issue a notice of trustee sale, meaning at that point, in 21 days, we're going to have an auction basically and sell your property at auction. And then 9.9 times out of 10, on day number 22, that property reverts back to the lender and it becomes an REO, real estate owned, which is a foreclosure that is owned by the bank. And then what the bank does with that, typically they get an evaluation, see what it's worth, bring on a realtor, give it to the realtor, put it on the market, sell it, and be done with the asset. But the beautiful thing about the market we're going into right now is that the number of defaulted properties since interest rates started rising last July 1st, a year ago, July 1, we've had 11 interest rate increases. The number of defaulted properties is up 400%. Yeah, 400%. So people might go, oh my God, the sky is falling. No, I go, oh my God, opportunity to become wealthy. Opportunity to become wealthy because the real estate market isn't tanking. But there's all these people in trouble that need to sell. Like the guy we just bought last week, he lost his job, unfortunately, and he was going to lose that house and walk away with zero. We were able to step in, cure his default, take over his loan, give him some walkaway money. He's out leasing a new place right now, getting a fresh start, doesn't have a foreclosure on his record now, saved his credit. He gets a fresh start. We get a house with over $100,000 in equity. Everybody wins. Everybody wins. And this next, call it 2 year period of time, because the average recession lasts about 19 months. But this next 2 year period of time is a golden opportunity to take advantage of defaulted properties, distressed properties. And that's exactly what everybody ought to be doing. Because if you don't come out of this next recession owning your first or your next home, you will have missed a big window to grow your legacy wealth, your family wealth. It's a window. And when it's closed, prices are going to run up like crazy again. I don't say prices are going to plummet, but there are segments, opportunities. I bought that house for $140,000 below market.
Wow.
In this market today. There's another one I got to go look at this afternoon when I'm done with you. It's happening every day. Look, 7 million of those 24 million jobs that were affected by COVID did not come back. So that's 7 million people who had to figure out employment. The guy I just bought from didn't figure it out. He wasn't able to pivot and get a new career going. He might now, and I'm sure he will, but that house was drowning him because he wasn't getting a paycheck anymore. And there was a 2 year period of time when they wouldn't let the bank foreclose on you. They wouldn't let the landlord evict you. That moratorium is over. Mm-hmm. So now everyone's saying, hey, you owe me money. Pay up, buddy. Or we're foreclosing. Pay up, buddy, or we're evicting you. So that the party's over.
Wow.
So there's so many thousands of opportunities to make money in distressed properties over the next 2 years. I think everybody ought to get educated about it. You know, I created a mentorship and a course, but if you don't take mine, take somebody's, because it's an opportunity. Don't miss out. Super wealth is about to be born for some people. There'll be a major transference of wealth during this next 2 years. And you want to be on the right side of it. That's what I think.
Definitely. Wow. That just hit me because I remembered, as you mentioned, they had the moratorium. So people were kind of getting off scot-free, if you will, for a year or so. But now, to your point, everything is
coming home to roost.
You know, you got, you know, student loans are back, mortgages, you got to start paying and all that stuff. I never thought about it that way, that that will then create a ton of opportunity for people in distress. And I'm also glad you mentioned the foreclosure piece and the fact that if you can do a creative deal with somebody and get them out of that situation, they can save their credit and move on and not have, I mean, whatever the mark is. And, you know, I don't know the details of foreclosure and how that works, but it dings your credit.
7 years.
7 years.
7 years.
I mean, 7 years is a long time. So, I mean, to me, it seems like if you can strike up a deal that works for both parties and they don't have that foreclosure on their record, and you can find...
It's truly, you know, a win-win situation. That guy I just bought from, I told you, he would have walked last Friday with nothing.
Yeah.
Instead, he walks with a good check from me. I get a property that needs no work whatsoever, and there's equity on the table, and the bank gets paid. The bank got cured. So the bank's now, the loan is in good standing. This gentleman is in good shape. He can now go, he's going to go rent an apartment and rebuild, and that's fine. But, you know, 2 weeks late, 2 weeks, if I didn't show up, he walks with nothing and gets a foreclosure on his record, has no money, nowhere to go. That's a lose-lose.
Yeah.
We come in, we do what I do for a living every day and save the situation, make ourselves a great equity spot. We can either rent that house out and make a profit every month, or we can sell it and make a big chunk up front and go buy five more, whichever. But the point is, we have that option now. And despite the fact that there's plenty of money still in the market buying homes, there's tons of distress with people who need to sell them. Yeah. It's the perfect storm. It's the perfect storm. If we were in stagflation or in a depression and there are all these people in trouble, the problem with those markets is there's nobody buying. Today, it's the opposite situation. I'm buying that guy's house, and the minute I clean it up and put it back on the market, there's going to be five people looking to buy it. And guess what? If I bought it at 35% discount, which I did, right? I bought it for like 65 cents on the dollar. Means I get to put it back on the market for about 95 cents on the dollar. Somebody's going to go, oh my God, what a killer deal. They're going to line up to buy the deal. I'm going to end up with five or six offers, and I'm going to do very well. And that buyer is going to be like, oh my God, thank you so much. I just got a great deal on a beautiful house. And our seller is secure and rebuilding his life. Win, win, win.
Definitely. I love it. So you're the first realtor I've met who helps their buyers get into deals creatively, interestingly. The question I have is, does the commission work similarly when you're helping somebody buy, like subject to or in one of these other ways?
You know, commission is always negotiable. It's technically paid by the seller. Oh, yeah. But when a seller's in trouble, like, it's all a function of price and what you bake into that number, right? So if I did this for you, instead of me buying that deal, if I brokered that deal for you, I would, in that magic number that we ended up taking the property over for, I'd have built in a commission. So a piece of that money he walked away with, he would have paid me.
Yeah.
You know, but as the buyer doesn't pay the commission. So you got an expert negotiating for you. I'm gonna find a way to get paid, and I'm gonna make sure you get the property and we all win.
Definitely. To be honest with you, Darren, I believe that's a skill set that all realtors out there should pick up, because, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, but a lot of realtors have that traditional mindset where they don't really think outside of the box. So what encouragement do you have to folks out there who are just getting started or who have somehow maintained and stayed in the business over the last couple of years to really think outside of the box to get deals done for their clients?
You got to put your entrepreneurial hat on. A lot of realtors are stiff and rigid, and they think, if I don't have a listing agreement with a 6% commission, there's nothing to be done. I see a deal everywhere my eyes land, there's an opportunity. We just have to find it. We got to put on our hats and make it happen. There have been deals where I take no commission at the close, and over that time, if I got that guy carrying it and that guy paying him over an installment, then I can make that seller pay me over 2 years. Money is money. A dollar is a dollar. I'm going to make a deal. If I make no deal, I make no money. If I make a deal where the guy's got to pay me over the course of a year, Okay, I'll take 6% of $500,000 over the course of a year. Thanks. No, nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of realtors are rigid and don't understand that we're entrepreneurs, man. No one's coming to save us with a paycheck. So if you don't figure out how to get a deal done, there's no paycheck on its way to your mailbox. So I stay creative. I stay nimble. I say, not can we? I say, how can we? You tell me, hey, Darren, I want to figure out how to buy that house. I'm going to figure out how to help you buy that house. And then I'll figure out how to get paid in the interim.
Definitely. I love that. And what are some things that have worked for your clients? I know you serve a wide range of clients. What's worked in this market and what has got people off the sidelines?
You know, what gets people off the sidelines is when you show a person an opportunity. So for instance, when back in the 90s, when rents were jumping incredibly fast, right? In Los Angeles, rents were climbing. They went up 100% over a 10-year period of time. I mean, rents were going up 10% per year, every year, and it ran for like 11 straight years. So 100% increase over a decade, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen similar rent increases like that over the last few years. But anyway, so what did I see then? I saw, let's see, prices seem like they're kind of aggressive or kind of high, but if that owner of that particular apartment building hasn't raised rents in 4 years, that means rents at market are 50% more than he's charging right now. I'm going to go in and I'm going to offer him a multiplier based on the rent he's getting, and then I'm going to help my buyer raise those rents, that 50% that's being left on the table, and we just invented money. We just created value, and I've helped people buy apartment buildings and add $1 million in value in 6 months because of the rent. Rental property is valued based on the rent. So there's an exact science part of it. It's not just this mystery. If I know that a rental house is worth $600,000 with a $4,000 rent, then I also know that it's worth $750 with a $4,500 rent. You know, there's some math that you can use here that can show you how you can grow your equity position without the market doing anything. So people that think they got to buy a house and sit around for 12 years. No, I'll help you reposition that property and make $250,000 next year because it's valued based on the rental value of it. If we're talking about investment property, income property is valued based on the rental value of it. If we can raise rents or if we can reposition it and make it more valuable, then let's do it and create that additional equity. And then you get a choice. You get to either refi and put money in your pocket and go buy the next one, or you get to sell it and realize that gain and go buy two more. And wait, I got a little golden nugget for the world. The ADU, the additional dwelling unit, and the friendliness of the municipalities, the cities, are letting you put ADUs, like turn your garage into an ADU or build an ADU in your backyard, which is an additional unit. That unit immediately becomes rental value. And again, properties are valued based on the rents that they bring in. So if I got $5,000 a month coming in on the house I rent out, and then I go turn the garage into an apartment, a studio apartment that rents for $1,700 a month, you know the rents in this town, right? An additional $1,700 a month will probably add somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 in value to that property. Now I can sell it and make a $300,000 additional profit, or I can rent it out and make an additional $1,700 a month. And we're in a strange time when the cities are saying, yes, you can build an ADU. Yes, you can convert your garage to a rental unit. And that was not the case 8 or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. Most big cities hated the idea of ADUs because there's more density. Oh, there's too many cars on the street. There's not enough parking. They've thrown that out the window because there's a shortage of housing. We have a housing shortage. The city is saying, state of emergency, what can we do to get more units? Let everybody build an ADU.
Yeah.
It's an extra opportunity. So here's the beautiful plan. I'm going to help you do this, Sam. Yeah. We're going to find a distressed property. We're going to buy it at 65 cents on the dollar, right? So you got a great deal. You already just made a couple hundred grand in equity, right? Then we're going to get a plan to build an ADU in the back of it and rent it out for another $1,800 to $2,000 a month. Now, suddenly, you got a property that you had a couple hundred in equity. Now you got $400 in equity, and you can either resell it and make that money, or you can refi it, take that money out and go buy the next one and have some income property for life and build a portfolio. Everybody should be doing it. It's a window. It's a magical, perfect storm. distressed properties. You can take properties and buy them below market, and the cities are letting you add income by adding additional units to the real estate. Oh boy, it's exciting.
I love it. I love the creativity and tenacity. And I mean, this should be an absolute encouragement to anybody who is, you know, maybe straddling the fence a little bit and unsure of if they should attempt to get in. I mean, we've discussed a number of different ways to approach it. And I mean,
that's why I created the mentorship. Yeah. That's why I created the course. I created this mentorship, this course that teaches people. Because look, you know, people are, you're an engineer, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer. You don't have time to learn the game and master the game. That's what I do. So I said, look, what are the people who want to be investors need? They need a mentor. They need a coach. They need somebody who's done it 1,000 times to show them how to do it step by step by step. So I invented or created a course, but I call it more of a mentorship because I take you by the hand and go, okay, let me look at your situation. Now let's go build you some wealth. You need to own, and you need to own fast, because this is a window where it's unique and the opportunity is there. And if you're serious about it, because it involves an investment in oneself, you got to be willing to invest. People, a lot of people are like, well, just give it to me for free and I'll pay you when I make money. It never works. I've actually tried that. I've given it away for free and said, okay, when we make your first deal, you'll pay the tuition. Those never work. When I make somebody invest in themselves, and we could make it easy, we could split it up, because it's not cheap. But I finance it, whatever. But I make people put some skin in the game. And those are the people that follow it all the way through to the finish line. And then when they're done with this, 6 months to a year after they've done this course with me, and I've helped them acquire their first two or three properties, you never have to relearn this stuff. When you learn it once, you're an investor for life. And then you get addicted. Then you want to fire your boss. This is how you do it.
Love it. Yeah. Talk a bit more about just how the mentorship and everything is broken down.
Well, it's built. It's an online video course. And the beautiful thing is there's a lot of people teaching real estate out there. Very few of those people are out there buying real estate. So the beautiful thing about my course is I take you and the camera with me and show you how I bought it, show you the numbers, show you how I took over that loan, show you how I financed it, show you how I repositioned it, show you how I'm selling it and gonna make $150,000 on that property in 90 days. I'm living the course. And so there are formal modules. There's about 10 modules that you get to watch on at your leisure. I'm up in the middle of the night, so I usually watch stuff at 2 a.m. But it's a formal course in that there are modules that teach you specifically, but the empirical proof is me giving you the case studies. I go out in the field and I do it for you live and show you how you do it. And then I show you how you can do it too. And then included in the course is all of my offer templates, all of how you deal with a title company, how you read a title report, how you should position the escrow, how to get creative with that seller, how to make that seller give you a whole lot more than he thought he would give. And that's the beauty of it. You know, anybody could go and have a realtor show them a house and make a traditional offer, but very few people can go out there and buy something for 65 or 70 cents on the dollar and have the seller get a creative way to help you buy it. I love that. The seller's going to help us buy his property at a discount. It's a beautiful thing. And it's a rare opportunity to take advantage of right now. This window, that's why I created the course right now. This course probably won't exist 2 years from now. It'll be over. This party will be over and we'll be on to something else. Yeah. But the opportunity to buy distressed properties from motivated sellers with equity. That's a big one, with equity. You see, in 07, 08, there were distressed sellers, but they didn't have any equity. They were upside down. So I created a course on how to do short sales and go negotiate with the bank. But this last 13 years, property values have gone up so high that everybody's got equity. They might be in trouble with no job, but they got 200 grand in equity. So that's the perfect storm for us, because I don't have to talk to the bank ever. I go to this person, I cut a deal. You got 200,000 in equity, but you're in trouble because you can't make your payments. I make a deal with you to take over your loan. I make a deal with you to make sure you walk with X number of dollars. Sometimes it's 50 grand, it might be 100 grand. If there's 200,000 in equity, I know immediately how much money I will have made on day one. So I make a deal with you that makes you happy, makes me really happy because I know how much money I just made. I take over that loan, I get you out of foreclosure. I just bought another piece of real estate. Win, win, win. That's what I teach in the course. It's golden. No one else out there is doing it. There are people teaching real estate, and there are people teaching sub twos, and people teaching this and that. Either they're teaching it and making money off of teaching it and not doing it, or they're doing it and don't know how to teach it in the creative ways that we're doing. So I think it's the best course out there. And I, you know, it's going to be very limited because I can't coach 1,000 people at once, but I can coach 8 or 10 people, make sure they learn it and win the game. And then I'll do another cohort of 8 or 10 people. So very limited. But if people are serious about it, you really want to play this real estate game, and you really want to fire your boss in 2 years, this is the course for you. There's a guarantee associated with it. I won't talk about the guarantee on camera, but if someone wants to know more about it, they should reach out to me, email me at info@darrencampbell.com or call us or whatever. Oh, there's a website even. They could go to my website. Can I tell them what it is?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's the course is called Recession Riches. The site to go to sign up or inquire more, set up a call, is recessionrichesacademy.com. And that's the name of the school I've built just for these purposes. And we don't just accept anybody and everybody because I have a guarantee associated with it. So I guarantee the success, but we got to interview you. You're going to get on a Zoom call with me and we'll see if you qualify and if we can, you know, gauge your seriousness. Cause I'm not doing this to charge you tuition. I'm doing this to help people become wealthy. And then they become my clients and my partners for life. So this is self-serving too. You know, you and I are going to do this, and then you and I are going to be investor partners for the next 30 years. So I'm building my team of investors while I'm helping each of them build wealth. And it's just not for anybody and everybody. I'm not trying to sign up 500 people. I'm really not. I have no interest in that. I want to grow partners and affiliates and associates. And then what happens is, I've mentored and taught hundreds of people. And what happens is 5 years later, 7 years later, they go, Darren, I got this great deal and I need a partner. And I jump in on a deal and we go make $500,000 together. You know what I mean? And it's because we have this relationship, because I was their mentor. They trust me. I trust them. I know them. They're serious. I know they follow through, and we all win.
Hey, that's 31 years of experience.
31 years, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's not a lot of people last that long in the game. As a matter of fact, a ton of people hung up their license.
60,000 this year.
Yeah.
60,000 realtors this year gave it up. They're out already. And this thing's just getting started. And 60,000 have deactivated their licenses. There's 2.1 million realtors in the U.S. About like 1.2 million of them consider themselves full-time active professionals, and 60,000 this year have decommissioned their licenses so far. Yeah, that's because people are getting run out of the business because of a lack of their ability to know how to generate business. No, you got to be able to pivot and go where the business is. If you think the traditional way for the last 10 years of getting listings and getting sales is the way you're going to do it in the future, you're going to be in trouble. You got to pivot. The game has changed. The market has changed. You got to change.
Yeah, definitely. I agree 100%. Something else I wanted to ask you about. I saw a video on your page. You were in front of a property and you were talking about just issues with the construction lending.
Yeah.
You mind talking about that a little bit?
No, of course not. That's one particular deal that we're in the midst of doing, and it's a year behind schedule. And the problem is, you got to be careful, because when a bank says we'll loan you money and we'll loan you construction money, this is part of my anger about the financial institutions. When you're doing a construction loan and they say, okay, we're going to loan you the money for the purchase and we'd love to loan you 90% of the construction money too. You go, okay, and you bank on that. And let's say they're going to loan you $200,000 to renovate, expand, build a second story, build an ADU, whatever it is. You got to read the fine print. Be very, very careful, because a lot of banks use what they call a third-party fund control company. So if they're going to loan you that $200,000 extra to use for construction, and you're betting on it, you're counting on it, what they do is they put that money in an account, and they have a fund control company that comes out and verifies that you did this much work this week or this month. And then the fund control company sends out their inspector and says, yeah, I agree. Go ahead and give him back that money. Well, I ran into a situation where the fund control company would come back and give us about 20 cents on every dollar that we spent. Meaning, if I spent $100,000 on windows, which I did on that particular property, huge house, an estate, then the fund control people come out and they say, oh, okay, well, we're going to give you 20% of what's allocated for windows. I go, well, how can that be? You see the windows. Here's the invoice. Here's my canceled check. I bought the windows. They go, well, nah, we hold back a portion of it until it's all complete, and then we give you back the rest. So what they effectively did is handicapped me and my partners by doling out, dripping out pennies on the dollar in what I think is a fairly aggressive move. And I don't know. I think there might be some ulterior motives behind the people who are supposed to be funding that construction money. But I'll get into that later. I can't talk about it for legal purposes, mm-hmm. but that story's not over. But you just got to be careful. Read the fine print. If someone's saying that we're going to loan you the construction money, make sure you're clear on how am I getting the construction money? They don't hand you that $200,000 and say, go run, go build. They might say, you bring me an invoice once a month and we will reimburse you. So if you got a $200,000 construction budget, that doesn't mean they're going to give you $200,000. You might have to have another $50,000 in your pocket to go front till they give it back to you. It's a reimbursement situation. Mm-hmm. Be careful, because I learned from my mistakes. I got burned and they got to damage me and my project. Basically, it's a year behind schedule because of that, because I feel that they took a predatory action and are in some ways maliciously delaying what's essentially going to be a $7 million project.
Wow.
Yeah, that's big implications. Big implications. And so read the fine print. It's kind of why I say use a professional every chance you get. Use a professional real estate person. Even we can get a little bit naive and fooled sometimes. Use an attorney if it comes down to like really, really hairy legalese that you need to deal with. But be careful. It's not a casual thing. It's high stakes poker. And, you know, the wins can be huge, as you know, but the losses could be devastating. They could wipe you out. One evil, bad deal could wipe you out. So proceed with caution. And that's why the mentorship is so important. That's why the course is so important, because I walk you A to Z through all of my mistakes. I made plenty in 31 years and fortunately have come out, you know, okay. But there are many mistakes that can be made if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. So jump in, but not recklessly.
Definitely makes a lot of sense. Darren, this has been a really great interview.
I can't believe it's been an hour already.
I know, right?
Like 15 minutes.
I know.
But it's been fun.
Yeah, I know. And something I didn't mention earlier is the interview we did last year was actually the first interview I did in the studio.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so we've done a bunch more.
You've taken off. Then. Yeah, I'm
Thank
impressed.
You, man.
You're kicking butt. My people are like, man, that's a good podcast. So a bunch of my people jumped over and are following you.
Man, thank you. I appreciate
that. Yeah, it's awesome.
I appreciate that. And, you know, it's always great to hear from different people in real estate, but it's rare that I get the opportunity to talk to somebody who's been in the game for 30 plus years, has seen all the cycles and done all the things. And the big thing you mentioned is that people should be aggressive, and there's a window with these distressed sellers. So I want people to really walk away with that. And is there anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I think everyone ought to realize that it's the perfect storm right now. It's an opportunity to jump in and become an owner, and you won't regret it. If anybody who wants help, wants to know more, wants to learn, wants to join my mentorship program, I can be reached at Instagram. It's just Darren Campbell. It's at Darren Campbell. You want to email me, it's info@DarrenCampbell.com. Or my YouTube channel is just Darren Campbell. And if you want to know more about the course, or you want to join the course or apply to see if you're eligible to join the course of the mentorship, it's at RecessionRichesAcademy.com. And that's where we'll teach you A to Z, everything there is to know about distressed properties.
Love it, Darren. Appreciate you jumping on the show again. And I know the listeners get a whole lot of value out of it. And you should take this information from Darren, put it into action, and take advantage of these opportunities that'll be coming up for over the next two or so years. So thank you again for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. If you're on YouTube, make sure you like this video. Make sure you subscribe. If you're on the audio side, make sure you leave that 5-star rating and review. Thank you all so much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.